Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Today is the beginning of a nationwide two-week prison labor strike. Prisoners in at least 17 states say they will take part in what could potentially become the largest prison strike in this country's history. They're demanding extensive prison reforms for the 2.3 million incarcerated men and women in this country. It's partly in response to the recent deadly prison riots in South Carolina. And the strike is also timed to coincide with the 47th anniversary of the Attica Correctional Facility uprising in upstate New York, when prisoners took hostages, made demands for better medical treatment, food, and sanitation. Ultimately, 43 were killed, including 29 inmates and 10 hostages. And as a result of that riot, changes were made in the prison systems. And Attica was referenced in the 1975 crime drama Dog Day Afternoon, Al Pacino's character negotiating with cops after taking hostages in a botched robbery, appeals to the gathering crowd of onlookers with one word. They cheer him because there was sympathy for the inmates in the Attica uprising 4 years earlier. Nicole Lewis is a TAL reporting fellow for the Marshall Project, who's reported extensively on the criminal justice system. Nicole, talk about the demands in today's strike organized by activists in and outside prison. They're calling, for instance, for an end to prison slave labor. What do they mean?
Many of the organizers see prison conditions as a real extension of slavery, in which people politically don't have the rights to advocate for themselves and are being forced to work.
Well, let's talk about labor, that prison labor, because we just did some reporting, as others had, on the prison firefighters who were receiving a lot of attention in California. Inmates, maybe 40% of the firefighting force there, paid just a few dollars. The ACLU is taking this up. But at the time, we also heard about prisoners who loved this opportunity to give back to the community, to get out, to do work outside the prison, to maybe learn a skill that they can have after prison time.
Sure. So this is something I've heard a bit in my reporting. I think on the one hand, the firefighters are a great example of how inmate labor is used. It's cheap. And at the same time, you know, if people were to leave prison with a criminal record, they would face incredible barriers to getting access to those same kinds of jobs as free citizens. What's the bigger context here is that many of the folks that I spoke to who were organizing this strike are reminding me that the 13th Amendment makes it permissible to force people into work without compensation, right? It otherwise bans slavery, with the exception being for some sort of criminal punishment. And these folks really take issue with that.
Prisoners also help run the prisons, cook the food. They do things in the prison. And I understand that the strike is calling them for not doing that. But some would say, look, if you've done a violent crime, part of the time includes, again, cooking the food. You're not going to be waited on.
Sure. I mean, there are just many just sort of divisions or way to come down ideologically about what you think people who are incarcerated should be doing. Mm-hmm. So there's one camp that says, hey, you committed a crime, you're behind bars, you get what's sort of coming your way, right? And at the same time, there's another group. I think this is the sort of arena in which the organizers were saying, yes, that may be true, but at the same time, the conditions under which we're working in many cases are unjust, unfair. Bigger than that, they have no or very little avenues to address any of the grievances that they may have. And so when we think about if there's an issue with working in the kitchen or a sort of dispute, or if something happens while folks are fighting fires and they look to have those issues, you know, addressed and to make changes, they have very limited avenues to be able to do that. And so is that reasonable? Is it okay? You know, people who are not incarcerated obviously enjoy certain rights that are protected. And so I think the bigger question is, how do the organizers make sure that their rights, their grievances are heard as well?
Yeah. So they've got 10 national demands, including improvements to the conditions of prisons, an immediate end to what, again, they call prison slavery. They are targeting federal laws that have increased the prison population, made it harder for inmates to sue officials for rights violations. They're calling for an end to racial disparities in the criminal justice system, something that's been pretty clearly shown, and calling for more rehab programs in prisons, which makes sense. But a lot of this costs money. So the previous largest prison strike in the U.S. ever was 2 years ago, 12 states, 2016. Have things improved in those 2 years? And what's the sense that this current call to strike might change things?
Prison strikes, you know, as you can imagine, are extremely difficult to organize. In many cases, inmates don't have access to the same kind of like technology and communication to really be able to rally people. So there's a big limitation. And as well, they face a ton of retribution for even just sort of standing up and saying, we're going to do a strike, we're going to try and organize something. At the same time, a lot of the organizers whom I'd spoken with basically said, you know, we understand that our demands as they are listed might not be met. The strike might not be the thing that restores voting rights for all felons. However, it's an important move, a political move, in order to raise awareness of the conditions of people in prison. When you think about it a little bit more sort of broadly, it tempers some of the idea that the only way the strike would be successful, quote unquote, is if all 10 of those demands get met, and starts, you know, getting you thinking, well, okay, well, what role do folks who are not incarcerated play in maintaining or changing the conditions of prison?
Well, other concerns, a lack of prison guards, there aren't enough of them. Prison workers aren't entitled to any benefits. For example, some of the prisoners are calling for a sick day. Meantime, they're not going to work at all. The call is for them to just sit in the cafeteria, not cook food, not do yard cleanup, and the regular work that prisoners do to run a prison. What happens to a prison when those things don't get done?
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes what happens is the prison will go into what we call a lockdown, meaning that any kind of movement or typical programming that happens for the day is restricted. Visiting is restricted, so family members don't get to visit their loved ones who are incarcerated, and people more or less are staying confined to their cells. Instead of the usual prepared meals that are made by inmate labor, correction officials will provide sandwiches and sort of very basic, nourishment for the day.
One of the other things prisoners are protesting is the private prison industry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if prisons are an incredibly opaque system in general, the private prison system is about as opaque as you can get. So private prisons are not subject to the same sort of reporting requirements as public prisons, prisons that are run by the state. And oftentimes, they're very much designed to sort of maximize the profit-generating aspect of incarceration. So you may have a prison industry in which inmates work for very little pay, with very long hours, in questionable conditions. Sometimes we've seen issues where prisons are staffed at the lowest level they can be staffed, which puts everyone at risk of violence and just is generally dangerous.
When you see something like this looming, it starts today, and you've studied and reported on prisons, one possibility is violence. We know at a facility in Michigan, after several hundred inmates staged a peaceful protest, but then chaos broke out. Are you worried?
I know that the organizers who I've spoken to have made very clear that they intend for this to be a peaceful protest, that they are organizing in a spirit of nonviolence, that the goal is not, you know, to incite any kind of uprising, but that does not mean that, you know, that something might happen. But I know that the organizers are calling for, you know, nonviolent. It's simply a work stoppage, hunger stoppage, and hopefully they're able to do that without any incident.
By the way, we mentioned Attica. Have conditions at least improved since that uprising in 1971?
So Attica was an interesting case. I think one of the biggest sort of takeaways from the incident was that it led to an investigation of the conditions within that prison. And so things did improve. It's hard to say, you know, on the broad level, there is no general oversight and regulatory body of prisons from state to state. And so in each place, conditions might be different. Private prisons are run differently. It's just very hard to take a pulse on what's happening in each place. And to say whether or not, you know, has it improved since 1971 or not.
That's Nicole Lewis, Tau reporting fellow for the Marshall Project. She's reported extensively on the criminal justice system in the U.S., which is going to be seeing a strike in at least many of the country's prisons from today to September 9th. Nicole, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And this related news note, California is considering a bill that would end cash bail, virtually eliminate the payment of money as a condition of release from jail for those awaiting trial. Supporters say too often that meant that the rich got out, the poor stayed in. Instead, the new system would create a system in which people would be held based on their risk level, and judges would have the discretion to decide what that is. We'll follow that story